What were some of the tasks you had to do in your first real-life adult job? Me, as a baby journalist, I was writing pretty short, simple stories about cake decorating competition winners and army cadet camps. My photographer friends were taking photos of products for catalogues. My mates in marketing were writing copy for brochures. It was all pretty menial work, stuff our bosses would never have done, but it helped us learn the basics of our job so that when we got to the more important stuff, we were ready for the responsibility. Well, earlier this year, a Netflix series used AI to complete digital effects work. It was done 10 times faster than it would usually take if people were doing the work. And in a moment, you'll hear from someone whose job was taken over by AI, so she pivoted. But I do want to hear from you. Are you using AI in your job? How are you doing it? Or are you a conscientious AI objector? Professor Aaron Quigley is from Data61, the CSIRO's data and digital research arm. Aaron, what was your first professional job?
Professional job? Well, I'd worked in my father's shop in Ireland for a number of years, but I think my first professional role was when I became a teacher of English in Japan. And then I was using digital tools to help me create some of the content that I was using with the students. So I've always been using digital tools throughout my entire career.
You've been putting your money where your mouth is since the beginning. That's good to hear. So with this concern that AI will kill internships and grad roles, is it a fear that's rooted in reality?
At the moment, yeah, we are seeing that there's announcements of reductions in the number of internship opportunities. But I think that's just a cause of industry and businesses thinking about what does it actually mean to have an intern and what does it actually mean to bring in the next generation of workforce. So I think we'll see more roles actually coming up in the future, because to drive these AI systems to actually interact with them and use them, in many cases, it's actually the younger workers who are more adept and are more willing to give it a go and learn and see what's the potential of these tools. So I think maybe at the moment we'll see kind of a bit of a dip, but the entry workforce will start to uptick, because people will need more and more people who are knowledgeable and willing and able to interact and use and drive these very sophisticated AI systems.
That is a more optimistic perspective than I think I expected. It's a different skill set though, isn't it?
Oh yeah, absolutely. But I think back to like every job that I've ever gone into, and then every time I've brought in a new set of interns. Like recently I had an intern that came in from a high school here in on the outskirts of Sydney, and I asked him to work for a week using AI tools. I brought him to some of the talks that were going on at the AI Institute in UNSW. I got him to meet with some of the scholars that we know and who we work with. He met with Martin Green and everything. So what we expect of younger people can be just reflective of the knowledge and skills and capabilities they actually have. So I expect more of interns, because I know that they have access to more sophisticated tools and they're using them in their education as well. But I think that's a great opportunity to bring in a more upskilled workforce and actually encouraging them to do more high value work early on, rather than just doing these kind of things that we wish we didn't have to do when we started out.
Yeah, that kind of busy work that you kind of give to junior employees sometimes. Well, it's funny that you sort of talk about this pivot towards developing AI skills, because Leanne Shelton's with me. She worked as a copywriter and then clients started using AI to do what she used to do for them. So she's pivoted. Leanne, welcome to Life Matters.
Thank you. Good to be here, Tegan.
When did you realise there was a problem for you with AI?
It started happening around early 2023. Conversions had started dropping and I started having clients say, oh, don't worry about it, I'll just get ChatGPT to do it. And, you know, I had a copywriting agency and I'm like, we're paid to write website content and articles, and suddenly there's this free shiny tool that's just crash-landed in my space. How do I compete with that? And I basically just thought, okay, I could take this time to freak out, but that's not really going to serve me. Or maybe I could use my experience somewhere and go with it.
So what did you end up doing?
So I basically realized that, you know, ChatGPT is all about words and I'm a word person, and too many people were focusing on the prompts, like the initial input, and not enough people were talking about the output, like what do you actually do with the content that AI generates? And so I thought, okay, I'm a copywriter, I've got marketing experience, I know how to make it higher quality. And I put on a webinar, how to use ChatGPT and still sound human, because that just seemed to be a pain point for a lot of people, how robotic it sounded. And I kind of taught myself over a month of how you can actually train this tool to work with you and then pump out quality content. And so that's how it kind of started, but it's kind of evolved a bit from there.
You're listening to Life Matters here on Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor talking to Leanne Shelton, who was a copywriter, still is kind of, but now harnessing the power of AI to still kind of retain value in the market, and Professor Aaron Quigley from CSIRO's Data 61. So Aaron, listening to Leanne, she could adapt. Some people can't. Like, what do you do if you're in one of these roles that doesn't seem to be adaptable, or are you just not being creative enough?
I think reach out to other people who actually have these experiences like Leanne did. We're not alone anymore. There's huge numbers of networks actually available. There's all kinds of training courses online. There's ways to actually find other people. So finding mentors, I think, is going to be very important in the future. And not just a single mentor, but actually having like some domain-specific and some career-specific mentors across two or three different areas, and then getting advice from them and getting introductions to people who are a little bit further advanced in their career than you. It's very heartening to hear what Leanne did, like taking the tools, learning, embracing them, and actually adding value beyond. Because I do really feel that we're talking about using a new tool, that we should be embracing this. Lots of tools have come along and people are worried that it'll displace jobs. But what it ends up doing is creating new jobs, creating new opportunities, because we just expand human knowledge. We expand the capabilities of individuals, and it opens up and kind of democratizes a lot of these tools. I mean, you were talking about Netflix earlier, and the fact that like small studios in remote locations can get access to what would be prohibitively expensive digital effects, and they can actually now show their creativity and their capabilities in small regional areas in places that, you know, Hollywood would never necessarily look to for skills and talent and content. It does open up a huge world of potential to give everyone's creative abilities. And then, of course, you know, the studios that actually do have access to the kind of the next generation technologies, they can still be at the cutting edge. But for everybody else, it does expand the potential and widens out what we can do as humans. Mm. And it does democratize a lot of access to these kind of skills and capabilities.
Leanne, I can hear you going, yes, in the background there. What do you sort of hope people understand about this landscape?
Yeah, so definitely expand on that. I really believe in using AI to amplify your experience and expertise, just like what I've done. There's so many other roles that, things like we still have bank tellers, even though I've had online banking. We still have QuickBooks and Xero, even though, we have accountants and bookkeepers, even though we have those software, and graphic designers, even though we have Canva. And so the thing is that we need to realize that there's still always going to be a place for humans. What are my concern is where people get lazy with AI and go, oh, look, just ask ChatGPT, get them to do this for you. And what I call it is like, it's a bit of a productivity trap. Like you get caught up in how good it is in the moment, how much time it's saving you, but not thinking about how it lands. Mm. And so what it needs to come back to is just remembering, all right, where can actually enhance me and what I know, not replace my knowledge. And I don't want people who know nothing about a topic and just getting AI do it for them. We need to be using the junior workers. Yeah, okay, you know what you know is fresh out of university, and you know how to use tools like you're born with a phone in your hand. You can. They're more likely to embrace and think differently to older people as well. So there's definitely opportunities for everyone. It's just like embracing that and just remembering that the humans must always stay in control. Like I really believe in a human first approach and not, the tools taking over. The tools take over.
There's a wonderful text on the text line from Mark. Mark says, using AI for introductory and junior work is inappropriate. I've seen a similar thing in the trades and manual work. It pays off in the skills and competence to use hand tools first, then the power tools. They're more effective if they have competence with the hand tools. Likewise, the computer assist. There are also reports that the human programmers are now doing even more doing even more. The AI-generated code needs review, and that takes more than doing from scratch. Aaron, what's sort of your parting words to people who are kind of going, how do I navigate this landscape? How do I develop the right skills or help the junior people in my life develop these skills?
I would definitely echo what we just heard, that it's the human voice that we want to accentuate and amplify. And we want to make sure that whatever we're doing is going to be very authentic. The worst thing you can actually see is when somebody is using a system and they're literally just passing it through. They don't actually have the capabilities to actually understand that it's an augmentation. It's an expression of them that they're basically putting forth into the world. So if it's not authentic, and if it's not actually amplifying the human voice, then I think that's a risk for all of us. And the way to do that is to actually to encourage younger people to actually develop their own voice, and then to use AI to just amplify that, so that they actually have the capabilities to look at what is being produced. All those software engineers you're talking about, those hardware engineers, all those developers, all those designers, all those content producers, they need to look at what's produced and use deep human intelligence and deep expertise to actually know that this is actually amplifying their voice and isn't just some hallucination or some fantasy that's actually being produced. So there's still a huge amount of human knowledge that actually is needed to guide what the AI can actually do for us.
We're not redundant yet. Well, thank you both for joining me today. Professor Aaron Quigley is from Data61, the CSIRO's data and digital research arm, and Leanne Shelton is the founder of AI training agency Human Edge.
ABCRN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.